Hey everyone, I'm Chris Hall, and this is the Downtime Podcast, where we take you inside the world of mountain biking, meet the characters involved, hear their stories, and find some insight to help us all get faster on our bikes. This week's episode is supported by We Are One Composites, and we're going to be chatting with the main man, Dustin Adams. Before we do that, just a quick reminder that everything you need that's podcast related is over on our website, downtimepodcast.com. There's a subscribe page, and that will help you subscribe to the podcast. I recommend that you do that. It will make your life easier, and you'll get everything delivered straight to your phone or whatever device you want to listen on. You can find links to our social media, so give us a follow. We're at Downtime Podcast on Instagram and Facebook. And you'll find our web store, where you can grab yourself some merch and represent. Also, please help us out by spreading the word. Tell your friends, share our episodes on your social media, and leave us a review if you have time. That stuff makes a huge difference, and it's the only reason that we've been able to grow to where we are now. Without our supporting partners, this podcast probably wouldn't exist anymore. They really are a huge part of enabling me to keep doing this for you, so a massive thanks on this occasion to We Are One Composites. You can check out what they do over at wearelonecomposites.com, and as a Downtime listener, you get 20% off everything listed over on their site until the end of March 2019. Just use the code DOWNTIME20 at the checkout. That's Downtime with a capital D, no space, and then the number 20. We Are One were one of the first brands to support the podcast, and Dustin kindly helped me out last year with a set of their Agent 29er wheels for my bike build. I've been blown away by how good they ride, and also how high quality the product is. They've taken a battering, and they're still working just as good as the day they arrived. When I found out that Dustin was launching a new range of wheels that were an improvement on the current range, I wanted to find out more. So we got Dustin back on the podcast to tell us how they've approached that challenge. We also cover how they test their product, how they benchmark the competition, the realities of having world-class riders on your product, some other exciting projects that they've got on the go, and much more. So without further ado, here's Dustin Adams. All right, Dustin Adams, welcome back to the Downtime Podcast. Thanks for taking some time out of your day to join us.
Yeah, thanks for having me back. It's good to be back and good to have a chat for sure.
Yeah, nice one. Yeah, it's good to catch up. So for people that maybe didn't listen to your earlier episode, first off, they should go and do that. They can find that in the archive on the website. But if they haven't heard that, just give us like a real brief introduction to who you are, a little quick overview of your background and what it is you're up to now.
Yeah, my name's Dustin Adams. I'm the founder of We Are One Composites. We're a small rim manufacturer in Kamloops, British Columbia, where we do 100% of our production from the manufacturing of tooling to the manufacturing of the rims, layup, engineering. Everything's done here in-house. And we started in 2017. And yeah, still kicking and pushing hard.
Awesome, good stuff. Well, I've been riding some of your Agent 29er wheels for about 9 months now since you helped me out with some kind of middle of last year. And like I've said to you in the past, like I've been blown away with the kind of balance of stiffness and strength and just how damped and quiet they feel on the ride. But you've decided that you can do better and you got some new product coming along. How do you improve from where you were?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, we've got the natural progression of a movement is what we created in the beginning as a revolution. And we're about to launch our new revolution line. And it's the refinement, the improvement, the small details that we could make better in our existing product line we've brought to market. And we've got a lot of new products that we'll round out the offering to the consumer, some new widths and some new purpose-built rims as well. And we're excited to get that out there.
Yeah. So where do you start from then with a project like that? What do you have targets or objectives? How do you decide what it is you're going after, I guess?
Well, our main target was designed for strength. So we have a very, very strong product. I don't think that's up for argument at all. I mean, a lot of people that have been on it and have ridden it and aren't just speculating in the pink bike comments are, will stand there and tell you that these things are tough as nails. And what we know is we could design the rim a little bit differently to improve on impact, keep the radial stiffness in line, if not even reduce it a bit. And end up at the end of the day with a more dense fiber and a more confined fiber package that gave us an overall strength increase. And that was our goal with the new Revolution line.
And what is enabling you to make those improvements? Is it what you've learned from the original products? Is it improvements in the, you know, the analysis tools that you've got? How have you been able to do that?
A lot of it was from what we learned, for sure. We knew where we could improve based on geometry design. That's a big thing. You want to centralize your main packages of fiber and to reduce weight and basically make the fiber carry more load where you don't have it just a big bulk for no reason. So we kind of said, okay, what do we need to do for geometry to make that happen? So we've kind of coned out the shape of the rim a bit more. We've gone to a larger package in the rim lip area to help and aid in impact. And then with the bulking or like the centralization of the fiber, we're able to then play with the stiffness even more accurately and fine tune with analysis tools, for sure.
Yeah. And so tell us a little bit about the process that you go through then to do something like that. How does it start? Is it a meeting? Like, do you sit down with everyone?
Yeah. I mean, it sounds really, really technical, but at the end of the day, we know with the experience from laying it up time and time again in the design, what we needed to do to make the agent better. It was pretty straightforward to us because we knew within the first 3 months of having that product out there that going, you know, we could have done this better. We should have done it this way. We should have done it that way to make, to like the layup process better. Like, that's the big thing, is processing the fiber is the root cause of all of this. So there were some things that we thought, okay, well, you know, we could get a better straightening of the fiber to make sure that everything's elongated into the rim mold when we were actually doing the layup. So we looked at the process. We changed the entire molding of the product all the way from the ground up. We reworked that and how the process of the fiber goes in, so that everything is elongated and there's no bunching, no crimping at all. We changed our bladder so that we can process a much better pressure. So we reduce the amount of, you know, excess resin in the rim, so we can shave a bit of weight and ensure that we get more compaction through the layers. And then, like I said, just centralizing that fiber, like what do we need to do with our geometry to make sure that we get the least amount of fiber doing the most amount of work, so that there's no excess in the rim at all. Everything is just kind of to the limit of what we needed to do.
Yeah. So really it's kind of relatively small refinements, but in many areas, I suppose, that overall create a much better product. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah. I think at the end of the day, I don't think it's a revolutionary gap. I mean, it's not something that, you know, is a game changer. It's just looking at, okay, we have something good. Now we got to make it better. So impact strength went up almost 20% on the rims, which is, that's a pretty big increase from where we were at in comparison to other competition. We kept stiffness in line, so we didn't have to get stiffness way out of whack to make that strength happen. So a lot of that design, you know, ended up giving us some pretty big improvements, and we haven't even really delved into bringing new fiber and new other materials into the rim yet to make it even, you know, that much better. So you know, here we are at this point where we've got six new rims, and it's only going to get better from here. I mean, this is the early days of carbon engineering in the industry, I think, and some of the new fibers and some of the new materials coming out that are going to be available to small guys like ourselves, and not just Boeing and aerospace and military and whatnot. That's going to be the next big step.
Interesting. So talk us through a little bit then. These, you say you've got six new rims coming. What are the different rims that you've got?
So we're keeping the existing product line. We're not getting rid of it. There's nothing wrong with those rims whatsoever. The refined new rims, we've come up with a new downhill rim, which we're calling the Strife. It's a 30 millimeter internal. Then we have, out of that same mold, we're doing our Enduro rim, which is our Union rim. It's a, exact same dimensions, but different layup, different weights. And those are both in 2.9, 2.7. Then we came up with a 35 millimeter internal width convert, which is both in 2.9, 2.7. So it's, those are kind of like our plus 2.6 to 2.8, even 3.0 kind of offerings. We have been testing it on a 2.5 and found it to be pretty good as well. So those are kind of taking care of the enduro aggressive riding downhill market. And then we come up with an all new 26 inch dirt jump rim that we sat down with Brett Reeder and hammered out some really, really fine details of what he needs to achieve to have a really good slope rim that can get him down the hill and do a good job for him, keep the tires on and keep the pressures high and what the demands are in that, and came out with that new product. We're calling it the Coup. And then we have a new 27 millimeter internal trail rim called Faction. That's an improvement over the Insider. Very similar products, similar weights, but again, impact strength goes up. Some new design goes into the rim, some loss of radial stiffness as well. And then we have our cross-country super light product, which is called the Revive. It's a 25 millimeter internal rim that can be used for both gravel and cross-country racing.
Wow, so, you're not messing around.
No, so we've been busy. We've been, you know, we started this product line, started it in late 2017. We've been kind of working on it and refining it. We started cutting molds in early July last year and working on this product. And now we're ready to kind of bring it to the market and show everybody what we've done.
Yeah, cool. You mentioned you're developing a 26-inch wheel for Brett Reeder. What is that pretty uncommon to have carbon wheels in slope style?
I don't think so. I think it's something that a lot of these guys, you know, talking to Brett and learning what he has been riding, and it's not just him, but a lot of guys are riding either a really heavy aluminum rim that's existing technology. No one's really come to the table and said, hey, this is a segment or these guys have a need. And all of them are riding either old 26 inch cross country carbon rims that are really light and not really purpose built for dirt jumping. We just kind of, no one's played with the rotational weight. I mean, Brett's telling us that, you know, when you're doing tail whips and bar spins and stuff like that, the rotational weight of the wheels are really important because you get a gyroscopic effect and it really affects, you know, what they're able to do on the bike. And if we can get that as low as possible, it makes them able to do tricks better and easier. So, you know, we took all of the information from him and his demands that he needed for a product, and we built it around that. So I guess it's a purpose built dirt jump slope style rim that that he's stoked on. So
lighter than you'd expect, I suppose. You've been able to build something that's kind of
yeah. I mean, he had some Bontrager rims previously, and he was down to like the nitty gritty on them. It was like a couple rims left, and that was it. And Bontrager wasn't making them anymore, and they were existing cross country race rims. So it's not purpose built at all. It's not, you know, laterally loaded for what these guys need. And the strengths were good. I mean, these guys are so smooth on a bike. It's not like they're out there casing stuff, but you know, when something goes wrong, you want to make sure that they have the strength that they need to pull them out. And yeah, that's where I think a carbon rim, if we design it purposefully for what they need, you know, we have that ability. So we figured, why not? Let's go for it. It's perfect timing.
Yeah. Do you think we'll see more slope style riders picking up that rim then? Because there's not many people making a 26 inch specific rim anymore.
I have a funny feeling I'm going to get a lot of phone calls from a lot of those guys asking it, because a lot of them don't have the need. And I even Brett was, you know, he's very curious about like who else is going to be getting these. So it's kind of awesome to see a 26 inch rim in that realm, which I'm not, you know, I am so far out removed from what those guys do, but to see him say, think that this could be an edge up on his competition is just so awesome. It's like, wow, we can like change the game in slope style. Like this, it's just nuts. So We did take it to the Vancouver Bike Show, and we showed, they had Jordy Lennon and a bunch of guys that were doing their dirt jump jam, and some of the up and coming dirt jumpers were there, and they were all really, really stoked and were salivating over the fact that we made it and were asking how they get a pair. So I think that the demand will be there. It's, you know, we're going to put it into our movement line pricing. So we're not going to be trying to, you know, ask $3,000 for a dirt jump rim. We'll make a fair price for it and hopefully get a bunch of kids stoked to have them on their DJ bikes and get out there riding them.
Cool. Interesting stuff. So where, once you've got your, you know, your fundamental design, I guess, for a new rim, how do you go about testing it? How much do you do in like computer aided engineering, just in that virtual world? How much is done in the lab, and then how much kind of ride based work do you do?
Yeah. So it's, the big thing for us was we knew where we stood with we had like something to build off of. So the computer modeling wasn't super crucial on this one because we knew where and what we wanted to improve on already. So we looked at dimensionally, how could we achieve the layers that we wanted to layer up into the nipple bed and remove as much weight or useless weight in that area to put that into more important areas for impact in the rim lip area and the bead seat area. And then what orientation of the fibers could we change in those areas to reduce a little bit of stiffness but keep the strength high? So we kind of looked at the shape first and said, okay, well, that's the shape and that works for the current layups that we have with our agent rims. And we're able to reduce the widths quite a bit in our nipple bed as far as the width of the fiber package we're putting in there. We saved upwards of 30 grams right there. And instead of just making it a lighter weight product, and it was totally possible, we decided that, you know, these need to be, I think, at a competitive weight, but how do we increase strength at that point? Not just focus on weight. We wanted to be durable and take a beating. So we decided to put that into our bead seat and rim lip packages to kind of increase what we had already been to. And we modeled that up, changed a few orientation layers compared to the agent. And we added a different weave to the product. And now here we are.
And so what's the first step once you've got something like a layup and a structural design, a layout that you think you're happy with? Mm-hmm. What happens then? Do you make some? How many do you make? What do you do with those first few?
Yeah, so we'll make a batch of four so we can measure consistency in lateral and radial stiffness. So we try to keep everything within 5%. And if we can meet that target, that means the processing is good. And from there, if we have consistency, we'll take those and impact them on our impact rig to kind of give us a baseline of where we stand in comparison to our competition and our previous rims that are purpose built. So we generally focus on width for that. So if someone has a 30 millimeter wide rim, we'll test it against their 30 millimeter wide rim plus the agent. Kind of get a baseline of, okay, well, we're looking pretty good on strength here, or we could bump it up. And if there's any refinements, we'll go back, make another four until we get the recipe nailed. Plus also the weight has to be plus or minus 2 to 3 grams, to make sure that consistency is there as well. 'Cause it's really important. I mean, plus or minus 15 grams in a carbon rim is huge. That could be a full dual layer in the nipple bed missing. And if you're not careful on your processing, you know, that means a massive strength reduction. So plus or minus 2 grams is where we aim. And once we've got the baselines of everything and we're happy with the strength, we're happy with the impact, we're happy with the stiffness, then we start riding the samples, getting them out on the trails and, you know, working with the tire profiles, working with how they feel through chundery chop and, you know, are they rough or rigid, or can we improve on stiffness with either spoke orientation or spoke type, stuff like that. So we kind of take the whole recipe and say, okay, well, this is probably the best case scenario here. And that's where we derive all the information from.
Okay. Just before we talk a bit more about the ride testing, just tell us about that, the kind of impact test in the lab. What what does that look like? Both that, how is the wheel built up, and what is done to it?
So we build to, we have a specific hub we use. It's actually, so Project Threat 321, I think without question makes the best front hub next to Chris King. And I, unfortunately, I don't have the funds to buy a Chris King hub just for testing. So we use Project 321s. We have a bunch of those kicking around, and we'll build onto their front hub so that we get equal tension left to right. And that's basically used for any wheel that we put through the impact test rigs that we want to have tension equal, the wheel built to, you know, a standard that we would hand to our customers, tension brought up equally as well. And then we'll put it into a fixed axle location. So it's fixed at the axle, and we use a linear slide to, that's weighted with 70 pounds, and we drop it at heights onto the same tire over and over again, until either we get a failure or we have a like each time we drop it, we'll check tension on the spokes, see how that was impacted on spoke tension, and the system, is the system falling apart or is the rim failing? So if the system starts to fail, i.e. the spokes start to reduce in a lot of tension, and you get a lot of drop each time that you impact it, then something's not right with the system. So you got to make sure you go back and maybe it's too radially soft so that, you know, the spokes are taking all the load, the rim is moving too much, and it's rebounding back into place so aggressively that the spoke tension's dropping and the system's going to start to have catastrophic failure. So we look at that and we continue to impact it in different parts of the rim. Usually we'll work around from one for the initial impact zone, we'll increase 25 millimeters at a time. And we'll do a 180 rotation from each impact zone until we actually have failure.
Wow. Okay. And you compare obviously to the, you know, your own rims, but you're testing compared to rims as well.
100%. Yeah. I mean, it's good to know where we stand in comparison to our competitors. We've tested, you know, Santa Cruz, Envy, Knox Composites, Noble Wheels. We've tested all Light Bicycle, you name all the top competitors, Roval, Specialized, all those guys, Race Face. And, you know, we happily would give them rims to do the same. I mean, you need a benchmark to see where you stand and where we're at. And we use that data to improve. So everybody's got a unique way of processing their rims. You can see where you can definitely tell when one company is using the same factory as the other company. And there's a few little fine details that if you're working with carbon day in and day out, you can pick up. So yeah, we do a lot of learning from that as well, and that's how we tell when we say we're better than these people, we can confidently say it that is the case.
Yeah, and so you've gone up. Did you say you've managed to go up 20% on impact strength with the new stuff?
Yeah, that's correct.
So I think I'm right in saying your warranty has been pretty low on the wheels so far. What made you strive to improve impact strength even more rather than to maybe leave impact strength where it is and look at weight reduction as a priority, for example?
It's not in our company DNA to produce this sought after lightweight product that, you know, is going to have a duration to it. We want to make a product that when our customers purchase it, they're not going to have to worry about buying another wheel set until the foreseen future. That's what we want. I'm not here to take a raw good out of the earth and throw it in the trash. I want to make it as good as possible, as strong as possible, have a great ride feel, and be reasonable with the weight. I mean, the weight is something that a lot of people struggle with, but when we're talking 30, 40 grams, you know, people at this level aren't racing to win World Cups. They're not racing to win podiums at their local events, and if they take it that seriously, then, you know, maybe they're better suited for somebody else's product. We want to make something that's durable, that is going to last, and that we can put our name behind and know that we've done what we can to make it the best possible product in everything, not just one particular area. Like, weight is not our main focus.
That's totally fair.
Yeah. It's tough. I mean, we get hit a lot with that weight. I mean, weight is now creeping up to you know, very close as far as an aluminum rim. But at the end of the day, an aluminum rim will never have the characteristics of a carbon rim. So that's it's just something that we know and we can understand. And a lot of people will talk on the internet about, you know, not that's not the case. If it's the same weight, it's garbage, or it's not, you know, why would you waste the money? I would say without question, generally, those people have never ridden a carbon rim.
Yeah, so I was going to ask you about this a bit later on, but let's delve into that a bit. The kind of the value proposition of a carbon wheel, because obviously they're going to be more expensive than an aluminium product. And like you say, they can be comparable weight. People, I think, because of bad carbon wheels in the past, maybe are nervous of them, mm-hmm. And see a risk inherent in having a carbon product. What's your take on the value proposition and why it's worth paying a bit extra for a carbon wheel rather than a good aluminium wheel?
Well, that's the issue. Carbon isn't just carbon. So if you look at one manufacturer to the next, yes, there's carbon strands wrapped in resin or blanketed in resin that, you know, layers go together in a design. That is a different material from one manufacturer to the next, depending on where they source their raw good. Then you have the resin that is completely different from one manufacturer to the different or one manufacturer to the next. And most, I would say without question, most carbon rim manufacturers out there are either unaware of that because they're sourcing from an Asian manufacturer that isn't going to give them that information, and or the layup as well. And the key is that what we make can't be replicated by somebody else because we buy our raw good and we design it differently than anyone else. So when we talk about a carbon wheel and the value proposition, it's how was that processed? What is the raw good in comparison to another company's raw good? And is their layup design better than another company's layup design? I mean, we can make a layup design really, really lightweight. We can make it have a lot of flex, and we can make those rims 3-4 different ways and have completely different outcomes for strength as far as impact strength or radial stiffness strength. So it's more about, let's talk about your recipe and what you've done differently than anybody else and what was your angle or your goal with your recipe. And that's where I think our value comes in is that we focused on overall strength and the overall package to be, you know, used as if it were everyone riding in British Columbia, which is without question one of the gnarliest areas to ride a bike. And if we can make a product here in-house that can take a beating on our local trails and our and in all the trails in British Columbia and everybody riding it around here saying, you know, these things are killing it for me, there's no issues whatsoever, then that's our value. Our value is that we've brought a product that can take a beating, is made for a purpose and an intended use. And we're not trying to swath the market with one product for everybody.
Yeah. But comparing that to a good aluminium wheel set, yeah. Why should people look to spend more on a good carbon product? Like, yeah, I mean, let's assume it's been done well. Benefits are they going to get?
Yeah, I mean, like we hear the comparison all the time. Like a DT 471 is like the benchmark for the best aluminum rim out there. It's 7075, a great extruded aluminum product. That's without question a very strong rim. I'm not going to sit here and deny that. It's inexpensive, yes, because it's inexpensive to manufacture. You know, I've gone over this many times. If I was going to buy an aluminum rim manufacturing line, i.e., a fully automated processing line, I could buy 7075 extrusions. I can put them into the machine and the machine feeds it through with one single operator, and I can knock out hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of rims in an 8-hour shift.
Yeah.
Now I don't have that ability with carbon. And the reason is we are able to uniquely tune and bring characteristics to the actual end product. Aluminum is you know, it's as good as its design. It doesn't have a characteristics in the material that you can say, well, it's inherently going to feel like this or flex like that. it's a homogeneous product that, you know, the extrusion is what it relies on. It relies on the design of the shape, where characteristics in the carbon, it relies on the layup, what we can put into the product as far as stiffness laterally, radially, impact strength. You know, we can play with those things. And when you build that wheel up, you've got a rim that isn't reliant on spokes, isn't reliant on the system as much to have a unique feel. It's one of those things, I think it's really tough to talk about it. And it's not to say that it's marketing and I'm splaying it out, but you really should just ride them and you can feel the difference immediately that there's something has been done here that I can't get that feel on an aluminum product. And it's not for everybody. We're not here to say, hey, everyone needs to ride this product. Yeah, you know, you should try it out. And if it works for you, that's great. I mean, we've really done what we can to make this thing ride way differently than aluminum rim and have way more strength than aluminum rim and characteristics that you will never find in aluminum. So those are the three main things that we focus on.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm going to add damping into the mix because that's, for me, that's probably the most obvious thing riding a carbon wheel is that it just feels quieter across the terrain. There's less kind of feedback's the wrong word, but there's less noise coming back through the bike and through the bars. That for me, that's been the biggest change. Is that fair? Do you think that is the carbon that's delivering that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've been playing around with the theory right now that like there's got to be some vibration dampening in carbon for sure. I mean, I think that's not a theory really, that's proven. But our theory is that with the layup and the radial stiffness, you're also playing with, okay, what kind of a tune, like literally with a tune, like when you thunk the bar or thunk the rim as it is and you can measure the actual tune, if you play with that tune, does that also transcend to how the bike feels and sounds on the trail as well? And there's definitely some dampening happening in the wheel, and I think the next big thing will be playing with how the spoke engages with the rim as well.
Okay, you think there's something to be gained or at least tuned by changing that connection point?
Yeah, I think it's how it's hard to say. I mean, I think how and the angle that the spoke is engaged into the rim, i.e. 2-cross and 3-cross, I think that articulation we're playing with a lot right now. We do build all of our 2.9 rims or wheels in a 2-cross pattern and our 2.75s in a 3-cross. And we're actually testing right now to see if possibly that it's better to go 3-cross on everything. We do it strictly for a little bit lateral, a little bit of a gain in lateral stiffness, but also a drop in weight because the spokes are shorter at that point. But we're starting to find from our feedback from our downhill team that the 3-cross might ride better.
Okay.
So we think we're going to put some strain gauges on some spokes and see what they're actually going through and gain some actual data that we can stand behind and see if we can make improvements there.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, so we were going to talk a bit about ride testing. So you've got some new product. Who's riding it for starters, I guess? And then what kind of testing do you do? Do you have specific runs that you use? Are you creating data from that? Are people just filling in like a feedback form? How does that all work and how's it set up?
Yeah, I mean, right now we're the entire World Cup and EWS Kona teams riding the product. They've given us some really good early results. Just got back from Tennessee and kind of had some head scratching moments there with a few of the downhill rims that we've gone back and figured, okay, maybe we need to make a slight layup change in the bead seat area. We had two failures there that were a bit odd, and the feedback from the rider it failed. And we found that if we're going to be doing the physical testing, we've got to get them on more of a strict program of, you know, checking each run, making sure that the tensions are up and we're not having the system fail on us and it's not all reliant on the rim at that point. But then also we've had a lot of local guys test the rims as well. We've been on the Union rim since Whistler last year, since Crankworx, sorry. Scotty Lachlan's been riding it. So a lot of top riders and riders that are really hard on product. We have a local guy named Brendan Edgar. He's a masher, and he's been trying it out. Matt Veer, a lot of our top guys in Canada and in North Vancouver have been riding it and testing it and giving us feedback. What we look for is, at the end of the day, is can it take a beating, and have you pushed it to its limit and said, yeah, that I should have or could have broke this or that on the next thing. Ultimately, it's just how tough are these things is what we really, really focus on. And do they not bounce you all over the trail? And I think knowing our existing radial stiffness and where we stood with the agents, what we've done this year is we've gone with all of our revolution lines at 21 millimeter depth. So we've reduced the depth 4 millimeters from the agent and 2 millimeters from the insider. And that goes consistently across the line. So that was one of the largest geometry changes we made to improve radial stiffness as well.
Yeah, big change. And that's cool having an EWS team. That's quite, they obviously believe in the strength of the product, because, you know, it's super important that the wheels last the weekend, and they do get a lot of abuse. I think a lot of teams in the past have gone carbon and switched back. So it's cool that you've got a team moving onto your product there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, these guys push the bikes and push the product at a level that no one, you know, everyone would like to think that they do, but in reality, they're on another level and at another point in riding than. And riding them harder and longer than anybody would mainly see on any given weekend. So there's definitely a nervousness for me. I come from that background, and I don't want these guys to have me be my product be the reason for a poor result or anything. So we definitely take it seriously and take their feedback seriously to make sure we can make the product improve. And they've been really, really helpful so far in giving us some feedback. I mean, we've got, ex-world champion Miranda Miller, she's giving us some really solid feedback from early riding in Squamish. Reese Verner, who's without question one of Canada's fastest up-and-coming enduro racers. And then you got, Connor Fearon and Jackson Frew on the downhill team, and young kid out of Quebec, Tristan Lemire. I mean, these guys are going to make us and hold us to account this year. And we have to really make sure that we're on our game and have delivered a product that they can trust and stand behind. And at the end of the day, I sit there at the bottom of the race course, and I'm going to watch Connor come down this year. And trust me, I don't want to see a rim fail and be the result of a poor result.
Yeah. And are they starting the season on production intent design rims?
Yep. For sure. So yeah. We've got Jackson's been doing a lot of Connor's unfortunately been injured, but he's back on the horse now. But yeah, Jackson and Miranda and Tristan have been beating it up pretty good. And Reese and Miranda got back from the Tennessee Enduro last weekend where Miranda won, and everything's got good feedback there. Tristan had raced the downhill and had a couple failures that we're assessing right now. And a few of those things have brought up some interesting results, and we're starting now to think we need to make a bit of a stiffness change for these guys at that level, because we know these things are insanely strong, and for him to have a failure, two failures over the weekend, we were kind of like what level are these guys pushing this stuff to, because we haven't seen this on any of our testers. That's just how much further ahead out there these riders are. So definitely we've rejigged some rims for them, and we'll be tuning something to them that isn't available to the public until we see it last under their season.
Yeah. Interesting. And do they look for anything different in the ride dynamics of the wheels that maybe kind of general public like me wouldn't want as a characteristic?
Yeah, it's actually odd. A lot of them enjoy a really stiff wheel where they get very little feedback, for the general rider, even myself, I'm like, well, that's you're going to be like a pinball over the course. And they're like, no, it's when you have that much speed, because they're going so much faster, it's more of a I guess they really like that, like just bouncing over the top of stuff. It's like skimming whoops on a motocross bike, and that's what they like in the stiffness as they get the suspension set just right. And if their wheels aren't kind of tracking through it and they want to start skipping over stuff, that's kind of what they're asking me for. I mean, and that might not be every World Cup downhill guy. But you know, these other guys, the two guys that we're working with and Tristan, that's what they're asking me for. So we're going to deliver.
Interesting. Yeah. So maybe a race specific tune for the very top riders and then a kind of publicly available setup that works for the other 99.9% of us.
Yeah. I mean, and that's something that is inherently sweet about what we have as far as a raw good to work with. I mean, we have that ability to go into the mold and completely change the characteristics for somebody so that they're riding it and going, perfect, that's exactly what I want. And that's something, again, back to the whole, what's the value of carbon? And that's it. I can't do that with aluminum. Once I have a design like that and it's not working, I have to rejig my tooling and come up with a new shape or an internal structure or something. So it's really cool to have that ability and see these guys kind of, it kind of blows their mind, because I don't know if the Kona guys have ever been on, especially Connor, I think he's never been on carbon before. And to talk with him about it, he seems pretty blown away that you can make one rim and then make it differently completely. I think Jackson came from riding on Envy, and same with Miranda. She was riding the Roval product, and both of them have had really positive responses and feedback from us so far. So they understand the characteristics. I'm sure they worked with both those companies in the past to improve the product for them. So they get it, and they're really excited on the product too.
Excellent. Yeah, look forward to seeing how they get on this season. Sounds cool.
Yeah, I have fingers crossed everything goes well. I mean, when you put yourself at that level, it's a nerve-wracking experience as a small company, because God forbid something goes wrong, I don't think you get a chance to explain it. I think you're instantly shunned, and the internet, it can be a fickle place for that kind of stuff. So it's exciting for us. We know we're ready for it. And at the same time, I'm equally as nervous, because God knows what's going to happen, right? I mean, those downhill races nowadays that's such a high level. Yeah, it's going to be interesting for sure.
Yeah. Good stuff. Let's talk, before we move on to other bits and pieces, let's talk a little bit about price, because often when you see carbon wheels that aren't built in the Far East, there's a price tag that comes with that. And somehow you've managed to work some magic and kind of keep your pricing. Well, it's never going to compare to an aluminium wheel. We know why, but compared to your kind of direct competitors that are manufacturing outside of the Far East, how have you done it? It's pretty cheap.
I really don't know. Being the manufacturer, I shouldn't say I don't really know. That's not the right answer. I do know. One, I'm not a full capitalist pig that, you know, requires billions of dollars to be happy. I want my crew to be happy and have a healthy wage. I want the company to be successful. And at the end of the day, I know what it takes to manufacture the good. And that's why we can be aggressive, because when you manufacture the good and somebody else doesn't, you know, there's a fairly large amount of money left on the table there. You know, it's a big investment up front to do it. But again, it gives you a much better control over your product. You understand the product better, and you're able to reduce your costs a lot as well. So we do have the fact that we make it, is the one of the largest reasons. But also we're a small company. I mean, I don't have hundreds of employees to pay for, and our scale isn't, you know, we're not looking to take over the world and you know, have our wheels on every single OEM spec out there. We know where we can play and we know what we can do. And, you know, I don't think you'll ever see our product spec'd on a bike. I mean, you know, it's impossible for us to make the product at a competitive price and get it to a bike manufacturer in Taiwan to assemble. So we play within what we know our strengths are. And now I think with the movement line coming forth and the spec that we put out, we're darn close. We're knocking right on the door at what they would conceive or perceive as a high-end aluminum wheel set. I mean, we're keeping our existing agent and insider wheel set, or sorry, rims, and we're lacing that with a DT 350 product. And our new price point on that is going to be $999 US. and that's aggressive. I mean, that there, we know we can still be profitable, and we are profitable. But at the same time, we're able to give the consumer an option at a high end aluminum wheel set. You know, there's people out there, they're spending $1,200 for a 7075 aluminum wheel set from a number of manufacturers out there. So, again, it's our process too. Our process isn't super labor intensive. How you put the carbon in and how it comes out is being really key for us. We don't have, you know, a whole bunch of duplicate staff on the back end of a mold. The product comes out and needs one guy to deflash it, clean it up, and put some holes in it for spokes, and that's it. So we keep our labor low, and we keep it that way because of the process that we put in place from the day one. So you know, you got to look at the whole system, and that's how we've been able to do it. I mean, it's a head scratcher for me when I know what the cost of the rims are coming out of China, and some of the prices these guys are asking. They look at how they play in the market as well. I mean, we do have a dealership program that we put out there, and we give our dealers a pretty good healthy margin. I don't think you'll ever see us at a distribution level, because the pricing isn't effective there. So there's probably a lot to be talked about there, is which avenue do we play in? We're manufacturer direct to the dealer, and then dealer direct to the consumer, or we also do manufacturer direct to consumer. If I was to enter into, and I struggle with this a lot, we enter into other markets right now, and we talk to distributors, and the costs just don't work for us.
Yeah.
So we accept that, and we go, okay, that's fine. We don't need the whole world. We just need a good, healthy business, and to be providing a product that people are going to demand. That's where we ended up with pricing. I mean,
yeah, good work.
We're making money. We're healthy. I'm making money. My employees are growing. We're up to 15 employees now, and I've just hired another 3 for our second production shift. So, I mean, the company's growing. This is effective at those prices. So it's not to say that we can't be, you know, a good company at those prices either.
Yeah, that's great. And what I was going to ask, what's it like to work at We Are One? It's obviously a growing team and a busy workload, I'm guessing.
Yeah, there's two different, I look at it as, well, 3 different levels throughout the company. We have our production floor, which operates consistently day in and day out. They have a target that they meet every day without too much, you know, pressure or constraint put on them. You know, they have to manufacture to a schedule, and they keep up without a problem. There's not a hiccup there. And there's 5 people currently on that floor. And once we have the layups confirmed and everything's good, it flows really nicely down there. And then we have the wheel building department, which, you know, that's probably the most pressed one for us, is, we do take on a fairly good amount of orders, and, keeping up with 3 builders right now to, you know, hand build each wheel to keep the quality of the product really high and not rely on machinery yet. And then we have the management sales staff, on top of that. So, I think we do the best we can to keep everybody, as feeling like a part of the team, but, everybody's really happy in the roles that they have, and it's a pretty chill work environment. I'm not a hard ass that goes down and yells at people. You know, our target, I think the biggest problem, or the biggest, not problem, I guess the biggest stress point would be the engineering department, where, you know, me and Fraser, we do a lot more than we probably would like to at times, just because we set aggressive targets and goals. But everybody else gets it pretty easy, I'd say.
Cool. How many wheels are going out the door in an average week these days, then?
Right now we manufacture, 80 rims a week right now. Okay. We manufacture.
Yeah.
We're doubling that we're working on staff right now, training. We'll be doubling production in April, mid-April.
Yeah.
And that'll put us up to 160 a week. And we're also talking with other brands to be manufacturing for them too. So there's a possibility of that, bringing on a third shift in a bigger facility and another big round of growth for us as well.
Wow. Keeps on going. It's good stuff.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting to see, you know, with that, I mean, with what the U.S. president's done down there, it's and what's going on in China and the prices and the availability and the lead times from China. We've been having a lot of conversations with other manufacturers or other companies to manufacture their good for them, and it's positive to see that we have that potential, and not only that, we have that interest, right? So it's pretty cool. I never actually thought that would be something that would come our way. So pretty nice to see that.
Interesting, yeah. And you've got some other projects that you're working on beyond the wheel side of things. Tell us a bit about where you're at with those.
Oh, the bar, yes, yeah. That project took us by surprise. It's a tough project. The bar is not an easy thing to make. It's something that I think a lot of people take for granted. It's just something you hold on to and steer your bike with. But to manufacture a really high quality carbon bar consistently is not easy. It's taken and proven to be a lot of work. And I think we're into our 6 month right now of testing and layup design and proving the concept. And yeah, it's coming to head. So we've been working with another company, and it's a collaboration with a small German company called 77 Designs. Giacomo is a fantastic engineer that's got some great ideas. He came to us last year and said he wanted to make this product, and he didn't want to do it in China, and he wanted to work with us, and he's got a new stem that he wanted to work on and work it into this whole system. So we decided to take on the overall manufacturing of the bar and work together on it, and he's been helping us on the stem side of things, and it's kind of the last 2 months now. 2 months ago, we decided that we were originally going to manufacture, or he was going to manufacture with his Asian counterpart, our stem. And I decided at that point, it just doesn't really fit well with the company motto. And we have machine capacity here. So we're actually we've decided to continue the collaboration. We're going to work together on it. And we've separated the two brands. So he has our bar that we're going to manufacture here, and he's going to use his existing suppliers for his stems and stuff like that for his stem product in Europe, and the bar will be labeled under 77 Designs in Europe and the stem, and we're going to manufacture the bar and the stem here, and we'll have the North American market with a We Are One branded product.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, it's really cool. The bar's it's not a 35 or a 31, it's an in between with some technology built into the clamp system. So it does have a 35 millimeter clamp area. And the stem and the bar are a package that we've tried to work for, we've been working at the ride feel, the stiffness, and the weight all in one. And yeah, we've gone through, I think we passed our ISO test, no problems. Now we're on the EFD testing. We built our own test rig for it. And EFD is it's a beast. It's a crazy test that the Germans put in place. And it's definitely not an easy target to hit. And I'd like to see if a number of these manufacturers do it or not. But that's a beast. And we've got a replicated machine here that we're starting to do fatigue on with that. And we know that right now EFD, we're 10% or 20% over as far as strength goes in the bar right now to surpass what their highest loads are on that test.
Yeah.
And I think we're entering into fatigue here this week to see if we can beat that test. And if we beat that test, we know we've got a damn strong bar that is at a really, really competitive weight with a bar stem package.
Cool. And what's the theory behind going with the intermediate bar diameter then?
So there's a couple things. One is stiffness. And two is, more Yakimo had the plan to, the carbon to aluminum interface at the stem. You're looking for the maximum amount of surface area on the carbon to grip it for anti-rotation. And then also to spread the load really evenly, for the clamp surface as well. So you're not entering into a pinching position. And once you have a pinch there, you've basically, you know, ruined the structure, and the structure could fail. And that's the last thing we want. So we said, what can we do to improve on anti-rotation and clamping area?
and make the largest amount of surface possible. And that's basically what we came up with as an aluminum to aluminum situation. So we've created a small sleeve that goes over top of the bar that has an articulation nipple built into the bar where there's that sleeve can't rotate or articulate on the bar. And it gives you almost 100% surface area in the clamping face of the stem. So the interface is amazing, and it gives you a really, really good anti-rotation and then no issues with crimping at all or pinching your bar at any time. So we've improved on, someone who doesn't have a torque wrench can't get on there and ruin their bar and you know, have us point the blame at.
Yeah. And so does that enable you to reduce material that you use in that area and drop the weight, or are you just, again, are you focusing on the strength?
It's really tough. I mean, a bar, there's many angles to test the bar at. And you, when you ride a bike, you have, you're over the front, you're over the bar, you're off the back. So testing all of those angles in such a small compartment, and making sure that the stiffnesses and the strengths are where they need to be. And then you have to worry about, you go from tension on the top to buckling on the bottom. All of those factors in such a really, really small compartment is a bloody challenge, let me tell you. It is not easy. Like, if I would have known it would have been this hard going into it, I don't know if I would have done the project.
Right. Wow. Okay.
So there's so many factors that come into play. You do definitely need to have, for fatigue, to have that much fatigue, and that EFV test is so insane to have to beat that test. You cannot mess around. You need to be pretty dense and rich in fiber to make that achievable. So it's unfortunately, it's not so much lowering the fiber. What you can do is you can reduce the stiffness of the fiber based on orientation in that place, okay. But you also keep your fatigue high and your stiffness low. And your strength up as well. So you got all those factors in there. It can be really difficult.
Yeah, tricky challenge. And talking of tricky challenges, last time we spoke, you were like in the early stages of working on a bike frame as well, I think. Has there been much progress on that side of things?
I think the willingness, yeah. It's as you can see, we bit off a lot of work, and we set a really aggressive goal for this year to come out with, six new rims, and then, have the Brett Reeder 26 inch thing kind of come to us unexpectedly. So we took that challenge on, and the bar with the stem, now manufacturing the stem here as well on our mill. All of that has taken up all of our time that we have. I mean, we wish we were superhuman, and it's not unusual for me to work a 14 to a 16 hour day. I can only do so much. The bike will come. It is an ultimate goal for us. And I think once we get all this product to market and everything kind of settles down a bit here, and we get into more of a manufacturing position again and working on small refinements, that's when we'll have more time to focus on it.
Yeah, that's fair enough. Yeah, you definitely bitten off quite a lot this year. So
And it's an aggressive target. I mean, it's been a year and almost a year and a half since we've been working on the Revolution product. So we've gone through many reiterations to get to here. So it's just nice to finally have landed on exactly what we're going to do. That was really nice. And then getting it into the mill and milling the molds and getting the product into production. We've been in pre-production now for a little over 2.5 months on all those products. So it's good to be, when we launch, we have stock and we can start filling orders. So we're excited about that. And I think that was one of the biggest abilities that we had, was keeping the agent and the insider around, was coming to market now in the right way, making it right for the consumer to buy it right away.
Yeah, good stuff. Well, we're getting close to the end of our time today, and we've asked you our standard three questions before. So to go somewhere a little bit different, we'll ask you a couple of quick questions. I guess it's one question with two different ends, but what do you think the bike industry is doing well right now, and what do you think it could do better?
I think it's nice to see that we're stable as far as standards go. No one's come out with anything revolutionary or wanted to maybe change something. It's really nice to see some people excited to stay where we're at. 157 has me a bit nervous, but the end of the day, it's not the end of the world. I think we should have ended up there in the first place. But what's not doing? Geez, I don't know. I'm happy with everything right now. I mean, I'm in a happy place. I try to be a part of the industry the best I can, but I'm just so darn busy. I most of the time, I don't really pay close attention. I think what I'm excited about is see the rebirth of racing at a high level and the athletes being looked after and paid, you know, the best they can. They're definitely pushing the limits of what products can do. And, I'm excited about that, I guess. I don't know what I could do better though. I think maybe I wish we could get more women on bikes. That would be really cool.
Yeah.
That would be awesome to see. I think, you know, it sounds cliche, but it would be really awesome. I think there's a lot more kids too. It'd be nice to see a changing of the old guard move out. I think that's something that could be done better is, you know, a lot of these guys that have been sponsored for a long time, step aside and let some of these young kids come up and change the face and change the game of the industry would be pretty nice.
Cool. All right. Well, if people want to find out a little bit more about you or see the product, where's the best place for them to head?
No, our website, weareonecomposites.com is the best place. We have all of our products on there. Well, we'll be launching the product, I think, on the 20-ish. Let's just say that. 20-ish. We're waiting for product photos and a few little website touch-ups before we launch. And as soon as our tech guys get on that, then we'll be ready to go. But yeah, that's the best place to check it all out.
Awesome. Good stuff. Well, thanks a lot for your time. And yeah, congratulations on a year of amazing progress and getting more and more products out there for everyone. And yeah, look forward to seeing how it goes down and seeing how the Kona team get on your product.
Yeah, absolutely. It's going to be an exciting year for us, and we look forward to seeing how it plays out.
Yeah, good stuff. All right. Well, thanks for your time, Dustin, and have a good rest of the day.
Right on, Chris. Cheers.
All right. That's it for this week's episode. I hope you've enjoyed hearing about what Dustin and Wear One Composites have been up to. It's really cool to see small companies doing great stuff in the industry and growing so they can employ more people and make more great products. If you're interested in what they're doing, then head to weareonecomposites.com. And especially for you downtime listeners, you can get 20% off everything listed on their site until the end of March 2019. You just need to use the code DOWNTIME20. That's downtime with a capital D, no space, and then the number 20. Don't forget to give us a follow on social media, subscribe to the podcast so you get all the episodes delivered straight to your device. And if you fancy representing, then head to downtimepodcast.com/shop and grab yourself a t-shirt, a hoodie, a sweatshirt or a mug and help spread the word. Oh, and please share the love and tell your friends about the show too. All right, we've got another awesome episode coming up real soon, but until then, get out and ride.